There are not a lot of men around anymore that can honestly say that they did things their way. I don't mean that by necessarily being defiant or rebellious, but in the context of doing what is right, doing the right thing, which oftentimes comes at the expense of personal advancement, financial gain, or public approval and popularity. One such example of someone who stepped forward in an attempt to bring to light what may not be in the best interests of humanity, at great risk to himself, was Phil Schneider. He was a geologist that claimed to have worked in several government black ops projects, digging massive underground bases and tunnel systems, which he claimed was being used towards the eventual enslavement of the planet. Schneider went to engineering school and studied geological engineering and structural engineering that included aerospace and military applications. He trained in explosives and the effect of explosives on structures. He claimed that his first job with the Morrison Knudsen Corporation, who specialized with construction of deep underground mountain or military bases, also called DUMs. He claimed there were well over 100 of these subterranean facilities in the United States, and that they're all connected by high-speed tram or by regular underground highways. One of the more fascinating aspects to his story is that he discloses that his father was brought over to America from Germany during World War II and given a new identity to work in classified projects. While I must admit that parts of his story are hard to swallow, many elements of his biography, particularly in regards to being the son of an Operation Paperclip German scientist, are entirely plausible, and the manner in which he died was very suspicious and possibly involved foul play.
I'm Phil Schneider. I worked 17 years for the United States government as a geologist and aerospace engineer as well as a structural engineer. I worked for such elusive elusive occupations with Boris and Knudsen, Bechtel, Page and Page, Aerospatiale of France, and a host of other EG&G and a host of other Los Alamos Laboratory and these kind of things. Anyway, my work as a geologist in building underground military bases, some of which are over 2 miles underground, high-speed monorail subway cars, if you might want to call them, that link these bases together. Some of them are capable of riding on a cushion of air about 3/4 of an inch off a rail at a better part of Mach 2. Incidentally, I helped work on 13 deep underground military bases. Actual had hands-on experience. Notorious was the one in and around the Dulce, the southern, southeastern and southwestern sides of Dulce, New Mexico, in the Los Alamos laboratory regions, where we built some hermetically sealed rooms that were very deep, going down over a mile. We also built an additions onto Groom Lake and S2 and S4 complexes. There are a total of 9 underground. They're called DUMs. Like, you can learn a lot from this dummy. But DUMB stands for Deep Underground Military Base, and or a deep underground DUM 2, for instance, is a submarine base. And I helped build a few of those too, which are off our continental shelves and then certain islands and out in the Atlantic and the Pacific in strategic locations. My father was a U-boat captain in Hitler's Navy, and he got captured and taken over. I didn't find this out until about 2 weeks before he died on his deathbed. He kind of told everybody in total shock. I was one of them. In fact, I didn't believe him. I thought he was kind of in delirium or something like that. And, of course, other things have come up since. And so, anyway, he was captured by the French, turned over to the U.S. Third Army, and then U.S. Third Army turned him over to the Navy. And he was a master machinist. Now, it's not a journeyman. A master means that they can take a block of metal and make a gun or a watch or some other fine instrument. And he was a master machinist. He later became an MD doctor and part of the Aerospace Medicine Group of the United States Navy. Was instrumental in helping build the USS Nautilus and its first nuclear-powered predecessor, the Enterprise, the first nuclear-powered aircraft carrier, and other ships like it. He pioneered all the ways in building a very small and miniature nuclear engines, and he even helped build, later on in his life, he helped develop the infamous grid bed nuclear motor, which is now employed in some things that look like flying saucers that people claim are flying saucers. Yes, we, in quote, the United States Air Force and other armed forces, are training other European forces to fly unidentified, or now identified, or in quote, flying saucers. We've actually built several prototypes that are flying under names of black craft. My position as a geologist and engineer got me to see a lot of things in the world. I've been in over 70 countries. Also worked for NATO. I carried a level 3 security clearance with a rhyolite factor. Rhyolite is a hardened factor, only given out to a handful of civilians and maybe a couple of hundred military men worldwide. I thought I was doing the nation, United States, as well as the world a favor by, I thought I was kind of keeping my end up. Well, it didn't work out that way. By the way, I'm still a geologist, still do geological survey work. However, I don't work for the government anymore. I took my security clearance and all my government stuff and cut it up and sent it back to the, pardon my French, SOBs. When I found out that a number of these 131 deep underground military bases are being used to subvert the Constitution of these United States and its people, I says, that is enough. Yes, this gentleman over here. Speak up, please. Okay. Yes, they are. The gentleman asked, are these tunnels connected to large caverns? Yes, these large bases are basically like this Colosseum. Everything's underground. Everything's a city underground. Most of these bases have military bases, and they have all the accoutrements of life. Remember, each one of these costs quite a bundle of dough, and some of it in our tax money, but most of it in clandestine approaches, and that's definitely undermining the country. The New World Order right now basically is dismantling countries, governments, telling governments not to war with each other anymore, basically, so that looks good on the outside. Of course, you've often heard of the term Global 2000, and that's a supposed sinister plot, or has been a group of sinister plots to produce biological weaponry to reduce or thin out the so-called ethnic cleanse of the population of the planet. It might be where these new designer diseases like AIDS and Ebola and Hantavirus and all these kinds of things have come up out of nowhere. And these diseases, end quote, almost have a mind of their own.
Phil Schneider died under mysterious circumstances shortly after this lecture was filmed in 1995. Officially, it was documented as a suicide, but his wife contests that and claims he would never do that, warned against it happening, and that he was allegedly strangled. even if there was foul play in his death, it does not necessarily validate his claims, many of which are considered by many to be far-fetched. What does lend credibility to Phil's testimony are the numerous other testimonials by other people that have come forward with similar accounts of secret projects in underground facilities in the US, in Germany, and in the polar regions. William Tompkins claims to have had access to top-secret spy information acquired through his naval career during World War II. Tompkins says that his work was partly controlled by the naval personnel who used to work for James Forrestal, the first Secretary of Defense, who was allegedly assassinated because he was going to go public to reveal what he knew about UFOs and Antarctica, where a South Polar colony was said to have been established by a contingent of Germans that did not surrender with the rest of Germany in 1945. This renegade breakaway civilization was likely the true mission of Operation High Jump in 1946, to locate and terminate this final Nazi holdout, which was unsuccessful for the Allies. In an interview given to Gaia TV at the age of 94, here's a brief excerpt from Bill Tompkins giving his testimonial shortly before also passing away.
It's 42. 1942, the war's on. Rick Abata, his hobby is sending these Navy operatives into Germany. They've been going all over Germany, and they're staggered at what they've found. Hundreds of different types of advanced weapons being built. These included 60-foot and 250-foot, 500-foot UFOs, round vehicles, okay, UFOs. They built some of these out of chromoly steel that would weigh tons and tons and tons. They had developed, or they had been given, electromagnetic anti-gravitational propulsion. They have all these UFOs, different types of propulsion that were unbelievable, laser weapon systems, unbelievable stuff. All over the country, Germany and the occupied areas, they had massive underground production facilities that they were using, they had developed for regular arms waste, like tanks and places to build Navy ships and all this kind of stuff. Most of it was underground. So they started expanding those facilities, and they put 11 of these UFO-shaped vehicles in production. So the operatives are trying to explain to us, and the admiral would back off and say, "Slow down, I don't believe you." And that went on, and then the captains would say the same thing. The operatives were nice guys, and they knew they were going to get the questions when they got back into the admiral's office, and they knew that nobody was going to believe what they said. And we were the ones, the only people that this information was given to by the operatives. Forrestal was the number one person in the country who ran the proper organization, the real organization to handle technically the extraterrestrial. So he was supposed to have had a mental breakdown, so they took him to the hospital there in Washington, the top floor, and pushed him out the window. And so that's the guy that wrote Admiral Rick Abata's mission, which then my mission came from his. That was the level of this information in the United States. So we had a young girl, Nordic, just outside of Germany. Some people talked to her, and they said, you are now involved in a new program, and you're going to have great support in this program. She had developed with eight girls. They were continually talked to telepathically to go and design spaceships. The little blonde actually built them. And eventually, two of those got over here in Area 51. But Germany found out about the Blonde, took her over, stopped everything, and then got to this point where there was some sort of pressurized program by the SS to control that original group. Now, several times they did work together, but Hitler allowed them to operate independently of the whole SS program, the whole development. So we had two developments going on in Germany. The girls didn't want their vehicles to be used for anything else but travel. They were afraid that somebody would get a hold of it and they use it for military, which is, of course, what they got. But the girls finally ended up in Antarctica in the large facilities. In fact, three massive caverns. And so there's cities manufacturing everything that you would need on a planet. 4 years before the war was over, it was decided that the war could possibly be lost, but if we win it, we still need to get out of the area because the Allies are going to bomb us off of the Earth and there won't be anything here left for us. So they decided to move to everything to Antarctica. Admiral Byrd, they're going to go down there and they were going to take out the whole thing in 1 week. The top people in every area of the Navy, best aircraft, best ships, best weapons, everything. And 5 weeks later, things didn't look very good. When we got down there, they had decided they were going to have one thrust from the west side of Antarctica and then the opposite side coming into both of them towards the center of the continent. And so before we even got all the guys around, and I'm talking about big four-engine flying boats, okay, and ships, battleships and destroyers and submarines and you name it. Before they got there, these fairly large, they were 100-foot diameter saucers, came up out of the ocean and took down everything. Many of the close-ups give you a real clear picture of the cross on them. But we lost that war. All over Germany and the occupied countries, Germany was building mass production of a dozen different types of extraterrestrial vehicles. Okay? So these are in mass production, not just prototype kind of thing. They've gone into mass production using slave labor with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of in-mountain massive facilities. 80% of that had all been removed from Germany 6 months before the war ended. It had all been taken to Antarctica, and they were continuing the construction down there. They had access to these with their submarines. They built massive truck submarines, enormous submarines, to bring all this stuff down to Antarctica. So the submarine still submerged goes through these tunnels. They go back through the tunnels and they get to a lake where there's all these facilities in the cities and naval bases and towns and thousands of people.
While Tompkins' testimony also contains some elements that may seem far-fetched, the general narrative is plausible. That Operation High Jump is still classified because it is possibly hiding some untold realities about World War II, how it ended, and the technologies that were developed during that time. At 94 years old, and 1 year before his passing, it's unlikely that Tompkins was making up stories for fame and fortune, and his military credibility adds to the growing body of evidence that points to the possibility that free energy electromagnetic propulsion and gravitics exist and have been successfully developed, and that there are groups of Nordic-looking people that may have used this advanced technology to break away from the grip of the current political force that controls the planet. Another researcher that spoke out along these lines was Bulgarian-born Vladimir Terzisky. He would lecture about advanced technology and secret societies until he suddenly vanished around the year 2000. Here's a brief clip of him adding his take on the subterranean South Polar colony allegedly built by the Germans.
The Germans were very deep into the occult, into the black magic, into all these things that the media would prefer not to talk about. A lot of this supposedly came up during the Nuremberg trials, and it all was stricken out of the record. The Germans were fascinated with the South Pole, and Hans Hubriger was an author and a philosopher that Hitler and all the other SS men and Nazi men were crazy about. Hubriger had this philosophy of the fire and ice, that the German character, which is the New World Order, the Illuminati philosophy of creating the supermensch of the future, that only the fire and ice of the harsh polar conditions can toughen the steel character of the supermensch of the future. And this is the second reason that they went after the South Pole. A third and bigger reason lies deep into the German mythology about the Thule people. When Greenland was still not under ice, there was a tall, blonde, Nordic-looking race that lived there and later moved to the inner of the Earth and still lives there, flying their saucers, much more advanced than their retarded brothers on the surface of the planet. And so it has been the secret dream of the Germans on the surface to find and to reunite with their more advanced Aryan brothers from the inner Earth, according to German and secret SS mythology. And the more obvious reason was that they were losing the war in Germany, and ever since the United States entered the war, it became obvious to anybody who had some international cosmopolitan education in Germany that they would lose the war. To every German plane produced and flown in the air, there were five Allied planes. We have seldom been told these statistics, that the Germans had about 1/5 of the planes. Probably the ratios of artillery, of tanks, and of other armaments were not much different. I mean, they were bound to lose that war. They didn't have the industrial capacity to match the Americans, the British, and the Russians. I mean, in the end of the war, British and Russians could freely bomb Germany with almost impunity. They couldn't reach anything of the Russian mega continent, very little of England, and nothing of the United States. I mean, they were bound to lose that war. So they basically decided to lose the European war in order to win the South Polar War. This is the same, So in the late 30s, in 1936, the SS Party did a four-year plan for the colonization of the South Pole, the Vierjahres plan. Very detailed plan. They were showing the areas without any snow. It's okay. Without any snow. And we see the seal of the first German Antarctic expedition, 1938-39. We see here quietly the oak leaves of the... This is oak, right?
Yeah.
The oak leaves of the Thule Society. It was under the sponsorship of the secret patronage of the Thule Society. They descended on the South Pole. This is a letter of congratulations signed by Göring, the Reichsmarshal of Aviation, to the members of the South Pole Expedition. And one may think, how come that the Aviation Reichsminister is interested in the South Polar Expedition, unless they were preparing to build some bases there for the Luftwaffe. The motor ship, the research ship Schwabenland, was launching flying boats that were scouting the South Polar continent and staking their claims. They didn't even bother to land at all places. They would just drop flags with heavy poles. That was enough by international convention. And then they would register their claims with the International Court of Hague. And this is how, in 1938-39, the Germans became the legal owners of a chunk of real estate, probably as big as two-thirds of Europe, south of South Africa, on the South Pole. Here are members of the expedition staking the claim. Much later, photographs appeared in the late 40s of the German colony in the Neuschwabenland from an altitude way above and beyond the altitude of the biggest stratospheric bombers at the time, which was about 10-12 kilometers. This is an altitude of 60-70 kilometers, maybe 100 kilometers, basically Earth's orbit. And the speculation is that this is a photograph of the German South Polar colony from a saucer, from that height.
Coastal region?
Yeah, close to the coastal region. How could the Germans do that? How could they move so much stuff to the South Pole? Simple logistics. I mean, I have this question again. How can you do that if you are the Kriegsmarine chief of operations? It was so hard for Admiral Byrd to go there in the 20s and 30s. Until a friend of mine told me, who is a U-boat buff, Henry Stevens from the German Research Project, one of the persons that has helped me tremendously in my research, he discovered that there were German transport submarines that could hold 5,000 tons, that were 5,000 deadweight tons, which is about 2.5 times as much as the standard Allied Liberty-class transport ships. The Germans had 2.5 times bigger submarines than the Allies were building surface ships. These submarines were so huge they could carry bulk cargo, they could carry personnel, they could carry armaments, anything. They were building them in sections on assembly lines in several dry docks at incredible speed. After the war ended, it became clear that about 100 of these submarines mysteriously disappeared. They were never scuttled, bombed, torpedoed, or surrendered by their crews. They just disappeared into thin air, a whole fleet of 100 submarines. Some of them resurfaced with skeleton crews of about a dozen men in Argentina after they departed from Kiel and with fully loaded with hundreds of people on board. And little by little the story emerged that the Germans had been cooking something big on the South Pole. I'm sorry. So Admiral Byrd went to the South Pole chasing something. Some almost tabloid rumors about Hitler being alive, combined with our study of the German U-boat research and development, and Admiral Byrd's expeditions chasing somebody there in 46-47, clearly show that a lot more is going on the South Pole than the media, the illuminated media here is willing to admit, the party line media. What exactly is going on in the South Pole? Admiral Byrd went to the South Pole in the 20s, 27, 28, then in the 30s, 57, to Little America. Little America is south of Well, right on the German presence is in Neuschwabenland, which is south of South Africa. Little America is on the opposite side of Neuschwabenland, so it becomes south of the Pacific somewhere, south of Australia.
It was 1939, second expedition.
Yeah, yeah. I found some secondhand, some used bookstore volumes on that expedition for $80, and I'm probably going to get them because they have some very interesting photographs there. In 46-47, which is the second South Polar summer, the first summer after the war was the winter, our winter of 45-46, which was too close. They did not have enough time to prepare just 3 months after the war ended in Japan in September 45. It was too fast for them. They probably had not investigated yet. The intelligence services have not realized the full amount of the German presence there. So, a year and several months later, in the next South Polar summer, which is the winter for us of 46-47, Admiral Byrd put together an armada of 4,000 men, armed ships, submarines, armed Coast Guard icebreakers, armed supply ships. There were Russian and British contingents in that flotilla. Obviously, it was an Allied attempt. It was labeled a peaceful expedition for exploration of the South Pole, and we would see the shortened version of the film later on. However, in this peaceful expedition, we see the advancing American forces peacefully storming the white fields of the South Pole. Yeah, with their amphibious vehicles. And other track unit, these are personnel carriers and other amphibious vehicles. It was a massive army operation, army and only army. Very few scientists were involved. Admiral Byrd lost in about 2 weeks most of his planes and retreated in disgrace and made an unauthorized interview which probably cost him his career in Argentina on his way back, quite probably, refueling or reloading with supplies in an Argentinian port. He had the lack of political insight to make this politically incorrect interview, saying that I think the next world war will be with an adversary that comes from the polar regions and that has the ability to fly unobstructed from pole to pole. Clearly talking about the German South Polar presence and their ability to outfly anything the Americans could confront them with. Some of the planes were shot directly by the saucers. Others were hit by beam weapons. They didn't know what hit them. Third, collided with invisible barriers and disintegrated in mid-flight by reports of other planes nearby. Which was obvious that the Germans had already installed the force field shields around their colony. This whole operation was meant to show to that faction of the American military that, well, see guys, we can't do anything because they are a lot more powerful than us. Our talks at length about stories that actually the two bombs dropped over Hiroshima and Nagasaki were German made that were captured in the underground caves by the Americans. And Hitler decided not to use these bombs, probably by the same reason that he decided not to kill all the British that were left stranded at Dunkirk at the beginning of the war.
He didn't really want war with England anyway. Hitler didn't want war with England to begin with.
Not only that, but when his generals proposed to smash all the Brits there, he said, no, gentlemen, you're missing the big point. We are not fighting, we are not in war with Aryans. We are not in the business of killing Aryans.
My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon, as well as through various other major book outlets. As always, I look forward to reading your comments. so please leave me your thoughts below. Please have a wonderful weekend, and I hope to see you again soon.